This morning, our preacher is Dr. David Nystrom. Now, there's a lot of things we can tell you about David Nystrom. I wrote them down because there's no way I could memorize all of it. So, he's considered an expert in New Testament theology and Roman social history, because who isn't? He's an award-winning teacher and a sought-after speaker. He's ordained in the Evangelical Covenant Church, which makes him family. Not only is he family because of ordination, but his mother and father-in-law are sitting in the back row right over there, Bruce and Shirley Pruitt. In addition, his parents attended here a number of years ago. So he's been part of this church family as well as our larger church family. His roles within our denomination have been varied. He's been a member of the Executive Council of Covenant Denomination, a consultant on matters of pertaining to church Christian education, church planting, and spiritual formation, and he has been theologian in residence for the Pacific Southwest Conference, that's our conference, preaching and teaching at local churches and mentoring their pastors, which is good on a number of levels. His education, he's a bit of a slacker. Undergraduate studies at UC Davis, divinity studies at Fuller Theological Seminary, and PhD studies of the ancient Roman world and New Testament at UC Davis. He has been a professor at North Park Seminary and North Park University, and he is currently also a professor at Western and North Park Seminary. And so our very own Emily Seiler had him for a professor this past fall. He's also been the vice president of academic affairs at William Jessup and provost and senior vice president of Biola University. So we can all say he's a bit of a slacker. But it is our privilege and pleasure to have David Nystrom here to kick off our series on the Sermon on the Mount. So please welcome David Nystrom.
That guy he was talking with didn't sound very interesting. So, more fun. I was a youth pastor for a long time, and as I shared with some folks sitting around me, I seem to have focused my attention on getting as close to the place as people feeling the need to call the police as possible without actually crossing over that line. So, happy to be here. Sometimes people respond, so that's not always, but they sometimes do. So, you're starting a series on the Sermon on the Mount, maybe the most famous sermon ever, and probably the most famous thing, bit of Jesus' teaching ever. And then we're going to talk about the Beatitudes today, also very famous. And when you get to those kind of topics, people often feel like they already know what you're going to say. Right? Have you ever had that experience where you realize you're not really paying attention? I have that experience quite a lot. I've even had that experience when I'm speaking and then wake up and say, I have no idea what's next. I wasn't paying attention to myself. So set the context a little bit. This is Matthew 5. Now, the first couple chapters of Matthew there's a lot of padding at the front, genealogy, etc. Chapter 4... there's the temptation, and then there's six verses on Jesus' teaching. Just six verses, and then five verses on his calling the disciples, and then three verses on healing. So you could say that could all happen like in the morning of one day. So there hasn't been a whole lot yet to which we've been exposed in Matthew's gospel. And then he launches into the Beatitudes, which is the opening of the Sermon on the Mount. Now, one thing that is true of Jesus' teaching is I'm not saying he likes to do this, but it is what he does. He says things, does things, makes a case in such a way that it's not what people expect. He says, "You know why I teach in parables? So you will not understand." Try that, you know, when you're going to go for a job teaching somewhere. You know, what's your philosophy? What's your name, sir? Tim. So let's say Tim's going for a job teaching. You know, I'm the superintendent of the school district. I'm going to hire him. What's your philosophy of teaching, Tim? And Tim says,
parables.
And why?
So that you don't understand them.
Yeah. So you know, I'm thinking, great. I want to hire this guy. I want my students to be more confused when I'm done than when I start. So the reason though is that Jesus wants to get to the deeper issues. Because what's behind, very, very deep behind the Beatitudes is this truth. We human beings operate, this is the way we're built. Most of the time, we have a desire to achieve, to build, to create. And if we don't have that desire, that we have that need, right? We got to go out, get a job, start contributing. And that's not horrible. God is the creator. We are made in God's image. So that drive, at least in itself, is a good thing. But there's another part of us, a much deeper part of us. The part that says what really matters isn't what you do, but it's your character. Kind. Generous. Thoughtful. And so Jesus is going to operate on both those levels in the Beatitudes. So I'm going to read them now. And if you have a Bible, you might want to read along. Or sometimes it's more effective to close your eyes. For some of us, that's always dangerous. But if that'll work for you. So here we go. You ready? Is that okay? We doing okay so far? So about 90% of you aren't sure whether we're doing okay so far. So, okay. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So what do you see? What strikes you when you hear those words? Pardon? So most of the time we aren't.
People don't go around saying blessed, blessed.
Yeah. So that word blessed, I mean, the reason we call them Beatitudes is from the Latin beati, but the Greek word is makarios. So the New Testament is written in Greek. So what it means is not you will feel blessed. I felt blessed. I have felt blessed. So I've taught a couple classes for North Park. Emily was in that one class, and my students surprised me. I think the first class I taught, the last day they had a little ceremony, and they gave me seven $50 Pete cards, $350 of Pete's coffee. That was less than a year ago, and I'm down to $29 on my... But that was I felt blessed. That was total blessing. But the word here, makarios, isn't about how you feel. It's whether you know it or not, whether you feel it or not, even if you feel the opposite of blessed, actually, when this happens to you, you are blessed. What else do you notice? Yeah.
The path to that is not easy. It hurts. Like you'll be blessed are those that, and there's a lot of pain.
Yeah. This is the fun thing in life. that sometimes the best lessons are the ones that come after the most pain, the most heartache, the most devastation. Isn't that right? So not be excited, not have a celebration like you know you just won something. But this is the wisdom of James also. When you consider it, when you encounter trials of many kinds, you know, realize that that there's good that can be drawn out of this.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's like the opposite of what the world would tell us is that makes you blessed.
Yeah, I mean, this is not, this is not anything that the marketers will say, you know. You know, you're like, if you're like me, you get, right, you have to, at stores, you're sort of forced to sign up or give your email account. So I get things from stores I've never been to before, you know. Cheapo Air wants to bless me and send me to Butte, Montana or something, you know. And so, but it's only $8. So, but they never say, blessed are you, we have good news, great news. Your adjustable rate mortgage is going up. You know, nobody says that. But yeah, so it's inverse logic, it's really two logics, because the gospel isn't saying that creativity, God, like I say, God is a creator, that is wrong, but it's saying look out of both of your eyes. Understand there's these two parts of you, the creator part, but that's not the deeper character part. Don't neglect the deeper character issues. Anything else strike you? Pardon?
Rejoice and be glad for all that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he says. Yeah, I mean, but even there, I mean, our notion of gladness, right? We have so superficialized, you know, it's crazy bubbly happy, as opposed to that deeper thing. So, a couple of you maybe saw this, but after the service started, a young woman walked in with a little girl. I don't know if you saw it, but she tiny little girl, she had on like a raincoat and like these little sunglasses, and it was just all of a sudden felt this powerful emotion, you know. And I just remember our daughter, who's now 20, when she was that age, and just wow, that was a deep sense of joy and gladness. But that's a little bit different than it still hurts. I'm not saying be happy like you turn into a masochist. But understand that this is an opportunity for a lesson to be learned. Okay, so let's go. Let's talk about them a little bit more. So the Beatitudes are a promise. I think that we can say the Beatitudes are a promise. A new order is coming into being. The kingdom is coming. But they're also an invitation. They're an invitation to slow down and pursue what we might call the virtues. Older generations called the virtues. Those deeper, not just character traits, but practices and attitudes that lead to those deeper things. Some of you remember the name Lee Atwater. He was in the first Bush administration, George Bush administration. He was, I think, the chief of staff, or I think that was his job. But he ended up contracting cancer, and he died rather quickly after that diagnosis. But he wrote an essay in which he said, "I want to say something that I hope truth that I hope the nation can learn on my dime. I spent my life building things, doing things, getting things done. And I now wish I had spent more time on those deeper issues." That's what we all experience. I'm going to be 60 in, oh, Lord. Like, yeah, less than 60 days. So I'm starting to figure that out. So, in the Sermon on the Mount, he offers us a window. He is bringing relief to the world. That first window, what's coming? The kingdom is coming. It's what the world needs. And he brings it in the here and now. There are harbingers of it in the healing and the teaching. And there's a window. He gives us an image of a window that points in the far other direction. There's going to come a day when God's victory is complete and this world, this veil of tears, is over. But the middle window, which is these Beatitudes, is here's how to live now. And you may have noticed that half of them say things like, blessed are you when people persecute you. So there are a number of them that are about what to do, what happens when stuff happens to you. But the other half of the Beatitudes aren't about what happens to you. It's about who you are. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. So there you get the clue. Those are some of those deeper characteristics. So stuff happens to you. How do you respond? But also, who are you? What do you accomplish? What kind of person are you? Are you a peacemaking person? So the first one, blessed are the poor. This is totally counterintuitive, right? Now, in Matthew, it's blessed are the poor in spirit. In Luke, it's blessed are the poor. And either one makes sense. If you take this seriously, then you'll go home and call your financial planner and say, by December 31st, I want my net worth to be zero. So, you know, give me advice in that regard. Anybody going to do that? But if it's blessed are the poor, well, how does that make you blessed? It makes you blessed because you, even if you're tempted to, you can't rely on things besides God. No matter what you rely on besides God, it's going to be tricksy at the end. It's not going to be trustworthy ultimately. And blessed are the poor in spirit. That's the way Jesus teaches it in Matthew. That's an awareness that you aren't even the black hole of your own life, let alone others. You aren't the center of the universe of your own life, let alone others. Poor in spirit means you have an appropriate view of what's important. Poor in spirit, he's saying, there are these two levels. The superficial daily one, the creative one, the one that gets things done. But there's also this deeper one. So you're not in love with producing. But you understand that needs to be in balance. Does that make sense? That's the first one. The second one, blessed are you who mourn, for you will be comforted. I don't think any of us enjoy bad news. I don't think any of us enjoy mourning. And if you mourn, you've been wronged. Anybody ever been wronged in here? I'm the only one, apparently, so... Maybe you sense you've been ignored, or you don't have as much authority or power as you deserve. Maybe it's your failures. I've failed. Have you? Whoever it is, you've come to the bottom. If you're able to mourn, the door that opens through that room of mourning is a door to blessing. Because what will flame in you is a desire, with God's help, to be right and to do right. If you don't recognize your woundedness, you cannot accept comfort. If you don't know you're bleeding, you ain't going to the hospital. So recognize it. It's part of life to be beat up, to be maligned, to be hurt. Recognize it and accept the comfort of God. Blessed are the meek. I think we are when you hear meek, what do you think of in our culture? What words, what images come to mind? Pardon? Yeah, wishy-washy, wimpy. Pardon?
Timid.
Yeah, timid. Yeah, like some character that, you know, like, you know, almost like that the Peter Lorre character in Casablanca, you know, the sort of weaselly, but even worse than that, weak. Well, that's not what meek means. Meek, you know, one definition is power under control, but here's a functional one. Meek is someone who's meek has the ability to offer criticism in such a way that it is welcomed. If you can offer criticism in such a way that it's welcomed, what that means is you've offered criticism without any venom whatsoever. There's no attack mode in you. I think we're really good at offering criticism with venom. And some of us, I mean, sometimes I've even like admired people who could criticize in such a way that there was venom, but the people being criticized didn't realize it right away. Like, that's really skillful. That's really skillful criticism. Meek means you aren't making it about you. Blessed are you who hunger now. Well, starvation was a reality in the ancient world. I mean, we watch, and maybe we don't even think about it, we watch trucks all day long on Highway 80. They're transporting all kinds of stuff back and forth. But in the ancient world, to move food, even to move grain more than 40 miles, generally in the ancient world, in the Roman world, made it economically unfeasible. It just costs too much. So people, there are food riots, famously, throughout the Roman era. People starving, where 100 miles away, that people had more than enough food. So hunger was a very real possibility. It isn't for me. I think I have 36 eggs in our refrigerator, and I think we might have some in the refrigerator in the garage. Right, I mean, that's not my world. But to live on the edge, as these people did. Blessed are you that hunger now. That's something that happens to you. Why? Because it gives you the opportunity to recognize your utter dependence on God and the fragility of life. Blessed are the merciful. That's something you do. That's a character trait. You extend it. It's something you bring. It's unmerited kindness, forgiveness. Mercy takes wounding seriously. I want to be guilty. Because to be guilty is to be eligible for pardon. So when someone says to you, forgive me, please don't say, don't worry about it, or there's nothing to forgive. There probably is something to forgive. In an odd sort of way, to say, don't worry about it, is not to be merciful. Recognize the wound in yourself or in others. And extend that grace, even though they don't deserve it. Be a person who channels the unmerited favor of God to those around you. Blessed are the pure in heart. Almost certainly there, Jesus is connected then to understand this other dynamic, the deeper dynamic of character, kindness, integrity, gentleness. Seventh, blessed are the peacemakers. That's something you are. You're a peacemaking person. Now, we have this one word in English for peace. And it's a multivalent concept. So that one word is kind of a drag. We only have one word. The ancients had many. So the Romans had words like concordia, pax, like pax romana, concordia, concord. The Greeks had the word like irene, from which we get the woman's name, Irene. But all of these terms are about the appearance of calm. So Irene has its origin in the world of the Athenian democracy. So the absence of obvious faction fights, that's Irene. So I think a powerful example of the Latin understanding of this idea is in the Agricola. So some of you may remember there's a Roman historian named Tacitus, and he tells the story of the Roman conquest of Britain in his Agricola. It's his father-in-law. That's his father-in-law's name. And it's the story of them. They're up on the border of what is today Scotland. They've just defeated the ancient Scots, the Caledonians, and there's a battlefield with thousands of dead laying strewn about the battlefield. And this one Scot, ancient Scot, looks out over the battlefield and says of the Romans, "They make a desert and call it peace. If you kill everyone opposed to you, then there's no more opposition." Yeah, that's a kind of peace. The biblical word shalom is about an aggressive, powerful, restless, energetic movement that makes good happen. Be that kind of person. Be a contagion for good. That's what Jesus is saying. And finally, blessed are you who are persecuted. That's clearly something that happens to you. That's a horrible feeling. Can be physical, can be your reputation. Why is that possibly a good thing? Well, it does help you get over you. If you're being persecuted because of your connection to Jesus, then you know you're on the right side of history. Don't get confused, though. Don't think you're being persecuted for Jesus if you're just being persecuted for you. So what does all this mean? So I think there are three questions. Number one, Jesus is saying, in my ministry, God is doing a new thing. The kingdom, which is how God wants things to be, God's will. Wherever God's will is understood and obeyed, that's the kingdom. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. God's will is done in heaven. It ain't being done here, but the kingdom is coming. And what is that kingdom? It's wherever God's will is understood and obeyed. It isn't a place. It isn't a social system. So Jesus is saying, God is doing a new thing right now. In my ministry, something new is breaking in. Listen up. Understand these two parts of yourself and put more attention than you have been doing on that deeper stuff. Second question. Do you even want it? Do you have a desire for this kingdom? Or are you really still addicted to the empire of me? I'm addicted to my empire, but are you addicted to yours? Do you have yet fatigue with this world? And the third question is, are you ready to receive it? Are you meek enough? Are you over yourself enough to say, yes, God, help me to be your agent? Not your agent my way, but help me to be your agent. Meekness, lowliness, and an awareness that we are not complete on our own. God made us for himself. We walked away. He has made it possible for us to reconnect. Let's walk that road. Amen. Thank you very much.